Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Most Americans can agree that we can enforce our laws without chaos in the streets or tearing hardworking families apart, and that our country would benefit from an immigration system that is fair.
Now that the court has directed the board to follow through on that commitment, the response appears to be not action, but more delay through a costly appeal.
And at this point, she's probably the only person that could file such a suit. So I sent that letter hoping she would get going on this.
What's happening right now is we're meeting every day or every other day on the budget. We have a proposal, and we're really close to having the votes to move it forward.
This bill ensures that Arizonans are not forced to choose between their bodily autonomy and their ability to work, learn, travel, or to participate in public life.
You said to Senator Kennedy that President Trump never demanded you to cut interest rates in your job interview. Is that your sworn testimony?
No, that is, Senator.
Okay. Well, someone here is lying then.
And joining me to talk about the latest in the disagreement between the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors and Recorder, questions about whether an appointment is allowable, and more, are Chip Scutari of SNC Communications. Good morning, Chip.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. And Attorney Tom Ryan. Tom, good morning. Happy Friday to you.
Good morning. Happy Friday to you as well.
So, Chip, let me start with you on this Maricopa County situation. There's been a kind of a fairly longstanding at this point disagreement between the recorder, Justin Heap, and the Board of Supervisors, in large part about who gets to do what when it comes to administering elections. A state judge this week ruled that Recorder Heap does have the authority to have his IT department come back to him. The county board then decided to ask the judge to stay that ruling, and if not, they're going to ask for an appeal. We're also really starting to see some sort of disagreement within members of the Board of Supervisors. We have an election coming up, in case people hadn't noticed. What is the impact of that?
No, it's a huge impact. It's a mess, and there's a massive uncertainty. And as Tom, being the attorney on this panel, knows, there's a maze of election statutes. But this, we have to take a quick step back. The 2020 election in Maricopa County was one of the most scrutinized elections across the country in all time. And I believe, and I think there's good evidence, that Maricopa County does a great job of having safe, secure, transparent elections. I think that's the first thing we have to establish. The second thing is all of this mess can be kind of traced directly or indirectly to the lies, fraud, and tomfoolery of the 2020 elections. When Donald Trump and other people, you know, talked about elections being rigged when they weren't, and these lies, and we're still feeling the effects of that. And the really big impacts, the real life impacts or effects of that, is that in Tempe, the city of Tempe, they have a May 19th election, I believe.
Correct.
It's called a jurisdictional election,
yeah,
or a municipal election. And there's something called the Purcell Rule that was named after former Maricopa Recorder Helen Purcell, a case that went, I believe, all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, that said there's a certain amount of time before an election where you cannot make a decision that's going to impact that upcoming election.
You can't change the rules too close to the actual election.
You can't change the rules this late in the game, in like the ninth inning of a game, you know. And with May 19th is right around the corner. So I hope Judge Scott Blaney does the right thing, issues a stay, which means just let this midterm elections play out, because it's such a huge elections for, you know, Congress, for governor, secretary of state, AG. But there's a lot of uncertainty now, and a lot of elections workers who do a good job are in a tight spot right now.
Tom, is there reason to think that any judge who just made a ruling would then turn around and say, maybe not. Let's just put this on hold for right now?
He should, but I'm not so sure Judge Blaney will do that. And Chip is correct. The Purcell Rule says we don't make these kinds of decisions so close to this election. And there's another one on May 29th, a countywide election. So asking the court to stay it so that they can affect, you know, it's going to take some time to get this all done. It can't be done in that short of a period of time. If he's not going to stay it, then they should appeal it. And I believe that the Court of Appeals would stay it. And I believe that Judge Blaney more likely than not would get reversed. The problem is the way that the county recorder and the county board of supervisors have been set up by statute. There's always been this interplay between who controls what.
Yeah.
In the past, we've always had agreement. It hasn't been a problem. It's only since MAGA, Trump, and all these others have come in with this quote-unquote election integrity issue where they've challenged, you know, there's too much bamboo shoot in our ballots, or let's bring in the cyber ninjas to find out that, oh, yeah, Joe Biden really, really, really did win. And they can't let go of it. And so every election is a challenge, even though some of their own candidates win. How is it that Kimberly Yee wins, you know, the state treasurer as a Republican and the Steve Richer, the Republican, loses his seat? You know, it's just if somebody's manipulating these elections, they're doing a pretty lousy job of it so far.
I think the worst part and the real world impact is that it undermines the trust and faith in elections, which that's an unfortunate thing. But when people hear about this, they're confused about, do I believe this person or this side? It's just a ton of uncertainty and it's a bit of a mess right now.
Chip, what do you make of some of the cracks starting to form on the county board, specifically between Supervisor Stewart and some of his colleagues, most notably the chair, Kate Brophy McGee?
You know, I'm not surprised. Just paying attention to Mr. Stewart's election, he was always kind of MAGA light. He always talked a good game, but there was some evidence where he could join. I don't know if join's the right word, but could be part of the election denialism crowd. And I think the interesting thing is Debbie Lesko, Supervisor Lesko, who's very conservative. No one would question her credentials, pretty tight with President Trump. She has looked at the facts and looked at the rules and kind of is doing the right thing, I believe, and trying to make sure, you know, that we have this confidence in our election systems, that they are safe, secure, and transparent. So it's kind of interesting. It's interesting how she's stepped up and played that role, and Mark Stewart is kind of the fly in the ointment, so to speak.
Tom, is there a reason legally for the board to ask for the stay and not just go ahead and appeal?
Yes, I think the smart thing to do is to ask for a stay, and for the reason that Chip said, it's because of the Purcell rule. Let's hold this off and then let's take a look at it after this election is over. Let's not change it so close to the election. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But, you know, if I fully expected Recorder Heap is going to push forward and try and make hay with this. And unfortunately, it's going to, as Chip correctly said, it's going to further bring into question the integrity of the election when that question really shouldn't be asked in the first instance.
Tom, let me stay with you on another legal question. This is over whether or not somebody is legally allowed to hold an office. The Navajo County supervisors appointed state representative, now former state representative, David Marshall, as the county recorder up there. He had been running for Corporation Commission. He's since dropped out of that race. But now Tim Lasota, an attorney that I assume that you know and maybe have worked with or against in the past, is asking the attorney general to decide whether or not Marshall is legally allowed to be Navajo County Recorder. And it sounds like the issue is it's still within his term in the legislature, even though he's resigned.
Correct. No, that you the law does not allow you to do what Marshall is doing. Here's the problem. You don't want to have somebody in the state legislature, representative or Senate, who's out talking about other positions because now they're currying favors to get that other position. So that's why that rule exists. I have filed a writ of mandamus before. I filed one with then Attorney General Brnovich over then chair of the Arizona Corporation Commission,
Bittersmith.
Bittersmith. Thank you for correcting that. And Brnovich took it and actually removed Bittersmith from office. I read Tim Lasota's letter. I think he's correct. I probably would not have taken the swipes at the person who's supposed to be pursuing the writ of mandamus on your behalf that he did. But I think he's correct, and I think that Chris Mays will take the steps to have him removed from the county recorder's office. That county has had a lot of problems up there, and the attorney general has intervened in the past up there with the county attorney. So I think she'll be brave enough to do it again, and I think he should be removed.
But there, as far as I – you tell me being the attorney on this show, there's no Has there been a court challenge to this rule about when a term officially – I don't believe there has been.
No, there hasn't. Okay. And I the best argument that Marshall can make is I resigned. I'm no longer a member. And so that whole thing doesn't apply. But that's not how the statute is written. And I think the public policy behind the statute is to prevent someone from currying favor with another – look – when you're a state senator, a state representative, your salary is basically $24,000 plus, you know, a daily.
Whereas, per diem and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you go to become a county recorder, it's multiples of that. So you could be using your office to gain a better paying job out there. That's why I think that statute is in place.
Now, what's not being talked about is kind of the political repercussions
yeah.
of this. I believe the House, the split between Republicans, Democrats, and the House of Representatives is 33-27. So now they're down to 32 with David Marshall leaving, former Representative Marshall leaving. The GOP is expected to release their budget next week. So that's a big deal to replace him as quickly as possible because, you know, there's not a lot of wiggle room there to get the votes up to, you know, make sure the GOP budget passes, get it up to Governor Hobbs, and then she'll veto it, and then they'll start really negotiating on a budget. But losing one person with that slim a margin is a big deal.
Chip, I'm loath to try to get into somebody else's head or try to discern motivations, but I'm curious, like from a political standpoint, what would be the advantage to David Marshall to leave the legislature, become county recorder, even though he had to have known that somebody might challenge it? People had telegraphed that they thought that this might not be legal. So knowing that there's going to be a challenge and a likelihood to his appointment and also drop out of the race for the office that he apparently wanted to be in.
I think it's a bigger salary. It's way less of a commute, obviously, because he's living up in Navajo County.
True.
Probably more stability because if he's appointed to this, he's the incumbent. He'll probably win re-election. He may want to get more involved in the election game, so to speak. But for those areas, I think that makes sense.
It's all speculation.
Just speculating what he thinks. But salary, the lack of a commute. You know, being up there closer to home, I think that may be an easier job for him than being a state lawmaker. Just totally speculating on what I think.
Well, the big question for me is where the heck was the county attorney? Because that's the county attorney's job to say, Mr. Marshall, before you do this, I have to tell you what the Arizona Constitution says and what the statute says. And I don't think you'll qualify. That never was brought up before Marshall was appointed. That's what we call legal malpractice.
Chip, let me ask you about we've been talking about upcoming elections. Let's talk about some of the money that is going to be spent in those upcoming elections. And this week on the congressional level, two different PACs, political action committees, one basically associated with House Speaker Mike Johnson on the Republican side, another on the Democratic side, both announced they're spending millions of dollars in the state. The Congressional Leadership Fund, which is associated with Mike Johnson, has reserved $5.8 million in Phoenix for the fall for, you know, TV ads, streaming ads, digital ads, a little more than $4 million in Tucson. The House Majority PAC, which supports Democrats, has reserved a little more than $7.5 million for Phoenix, a little more than $2.5 million in Tucson. I mean, is this another – seems like an indication that both sides consider – I'm assuming this is CD1, the David Schweikert district, which is going to be an open seat, and in Tucson, Juan Sescamani's district, CD6. Both sides, it seems like there's evidence, see that as winnable.
Oh, yeah. Those two congressional districts you just mentioned are two of the most competitive swing districts in the entire country. And with the Republicans holding such a slim advantage in the House – you know, both sides are doing everything they can to, you know, sway the advantage. Reading the polls and not being partisan, but reading the polls and President Trump's approval rating keeps dropping, whether it's Iran or the economy or whatever. I think if the Democrats just kind of stay in the ballpark of money and advertising with the Republicans, that they're going to be fine just because – you know, every sign, you know, consumer confidence is down. There's other telltale signs about the economy that this is probably not going to be a good year for Republicans. And that's usually the way it is after a midterm with, you know, after a Republican being elected, their party can struggle. It happens on both sides of the political spectrum. So I think the money is important, but I also think it's going to be the momentum and what the campaign messages are about much more. Sometimes there's, you know, the rule of law of diminishing returns. You can have so much money, but one political consultant said you can drop a piano on someone one time. The second time, it doesn't really hurt as much. So I'm stealing that from another political consultant, but it's a good way to explain it.
Do you think, Chip, of those two districts, is Republicans are obviously defending both of them, even though it's an open seat in CD1. It's held by a Republican, David Schweikert. Do you think if are Republicans more nervous about one or the other of those?
You know, I would say I think they're nervous about both, really. And I'm, as a CD1 voter, longtime CD1 voter, I'll believe it when I see it, when a Democrat wins that race. You know, we'll see. It's going to be up for grabs.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Representative Ciscomani is going to have a really tough reelection fight on his hands down Tucson. If I had to pick one, I'd say that one is probably more likely to swing.
CD6 in Tucson. Okay.
Even though I think Ciscomani is an excellent, you know, campaigner and he's good on the stump. But I think that they probably have a better chance just with the demographics and kind of the election dynamics of winning that one. But we'll see. Both could go Republican.
Joanne Mendoza down there in CD6 has really raised a lot of money.
The Democratic candidate.
And she's been polling well and doing a lot of campaigning down there. I think that one, and I agree with Chip, I think that one will shift back to the Democrat, the Democratic side. As for CD1, that one is, I think, more up in the air because who's coming out of it?
Big primaries on both sides of that one.
Big primary on both sides. Amos Shaw is a tough campaigner because he wears out shoe leather. He gets out and knocks on doors. And, you know, Marlene Galan Woods is a very attractive candidate, both, you know, politically and physically. You would think that she would be doing much better than she is, but Amos Shaw seems to be way ahead of her in the polling data that I've seen.
See, now, if I was a DCCC, you know, in charge of these elections, what they did in the Tucson area was smart. I don't know if they did this on purpose, but they got those other candidates out of the race in CD1 up here in Scottsdale, Fountain Hills. Like Tom said, there's five or six
candidates.
Really good candidates. They're all fight. So they're going to have less time to make the case against the Republican. I would have cleared the field if I was running these races, but I'm not in that position.
Well, it's a good point, Tom, because, for example, in CD1, one of the candidates on the Republican side is Jay Feely, who you would think, being a former NFL player and sideline reporter, pretty most people will at least have heard of his name, even if they don't know much about him politically. And with both sides spending a ton of money in that district on that race, could it be like it might be the issues on the margins like name ID that come down to it? And if you're fighting in a – Feely, of course, has a primary. He's not necessarily going to come out of that. But on the Democratic side, you have at least two candidates who have run before in primaries in the recent past still going at it with each other.
Yes. We just got to see who comes out of the primaries here. Again, that's going to be the tail of the tape. If it's Marlene Galan Woods, I think she would probably take down the Republican candidate, even if it's Jay Feely. I do. If it's Amos Shaw, and he's a great campaigner.
He won the primary two years ago.
2 years ago. But he got stomped in the – you know, it wasn't very close in the last election, as I recall. I think once you get past the primary, though, I think it is going to be – how long are the coattails of Donald Trump? And they don't look very long this election. In fact, you probably don't want to be hanging on to him at all in a swing district like CD1. You really want to start showing some independence from Trump and MAGA. MAGA candidates on a statewide basis have not been doing well. On a legislative district basis, they seem to do well. But on a statewide basis you know, that's why we don't have a Governor Kerry Lake or an Attorney General Abe Hamaday or, you know, a U.S. Senator Sally, you know, McSally or, you know, Wendy Rogers. So It really depends on how MAGA Jay Feely is going to be, how Trumpian Jay Feely is going to be, or any of the other candidates coming out of the GOP.
Now, the big difference in CD1, obviously, is Amit Shah lost to a longtime incumbent, David Schweikert, who's
right.
now running for governor, has vacated the seat. So it's a up-for-grab seat. So that could sway a few things. And this will be a much better cycle, or should be, for Democrats than Republicans.
Yep.
Chip, one more fundraising question I want to ask you about. It seems if you're a U.S. senator and you have a fight with the Trump administration, it's good for your bottom line, huh?
Oh, God.
Incumbency has its privileges. And before this, Senator Kelly is just a monster of a fundraiser.
He always has been kind of a big fundraiser.
But this has just jacked it up, this fight with Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, Secretary of Defense, whatever you call him. But he's just been a brilliant fundraiser, and almost like John Kyle was back in the day, Republican John Kyle. And these are like presidential contender numbers. And of course, he's on the short list to run in 2028, or at least be on the considered list.
Yeah.
So, incumbency has its privileges. You saw the same thing with Governor Katie Hobbs, who has a massive amount of cash on hand. Like, these numbers just dwarf what was thought of 5 or 6 years ago. But Senator Kelly is just super impressive. Even my Republicans have to say, wow, this guy is a juggernaut.
Tom, at least when it comes to Governor Hobbs, which Chip mentioned, she also has been sending out press releases touting her fundraising. In a race like that, she's obviously on the ballot this year. How much does it matter how much the candidate raises? Because it's obviously going to be a lot of outside money. Like, if Andy Biggs is the nominee on the Republican side, Turning Point is going to spend a lot of money. They've said they're going to spend a lot of money on his behalf. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, how much does it matter what the candidate and their campaign raises versus all of the outside money that's going to come in?
That's a great question. I think the idea of what the candidate raises really shows their level of popularity with the people that need to support them. They have no control about the out-of-state money. But it does show something here. Katie Hobbs is a known commodity, and she's been more of a centrist than a progressive in her administration. They've tried to create a whole series of performative bills to force her to veto, so they can call her the veto queen and everything else like that. People like to see a governor that's active, that's protective, that seems to be paying attention to things. And Katie Hobbs has been doing that. Personally, she's got kind of a funny voice. She doesn't come off strong. She didn't debate in the last election, and yet she still won. Andy Biggs has not learned how to deal with that. He's going to probably go the same way Carrie Lake did. And I really do believe that he's going to, TPUSA is going to come in and be very MAGA-like, and it's going to hurt him. I think even with all the money they're going to bring, I think it's going to hurt him in the general election.
Interesting. All right, guys, we'll have to leave it there. Tom Ryan, Chip Scutari, thanks to you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.